We have quite a few announcements this morning, so I'm going to get started. Let's see here. Spring has sprung. That means regular volunteer mowing is required, including this week. Please sign up on the sheet posted on the wall in the social hall or contact John Kuhn. It is time to get involved at LCUUC. Sign up for LCUUC committees and work groups during the month of May. Sharing the ministry signups are in the social hall or online. You can click the link on our homepage. Need more time or information? Sign up online at the website. Calling all kids, we want to sing a great song like the beat of a drum for RE Sunday. That's next week. This will be fun and have the children's and adult choir singing together and features lots of percussions. So if you want to beat your drum, come on and practice after the service this morning here in the sanctuary. One last announcement is that the children of the third and fifth grade classroom are hosting a food drive as the end of their end of the year social justice project. There's a great tote in the foyer at the church for your donations of peanut butter and jelly. Often children who rely on free lunch programs at their schools during the school year don't have a reliable source of lunch during the summer months when school is out. PB&J can provide a nutritious option for them. All donations will be taken to the local Lake County food banks. Thank you for supporting the effort of our youth. Flower communion and annual meeting reminder. Believe it or not, it's only 3 weeks until our annual flower communion service and the congregation's annual meeting. So here's a heads up reminder that we'll be bringing a small live potted plant to the flower communion and take one home. There'll be extras, so don't worry if you can't bring one or you forget. Today, we'd like to welcome back Reverend Tony Larson to our pulpit. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or how they present gender. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have here with you today as we begin our service. Thank you. We kindle this flame with love for mothers and foremothers, past, present, and future. We kindle this flame in celebration of community and its generations. We kindle this flame with respect and support for the greater circle of life, of which we are all a part. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our opening hymn, Let It Be a Dance, number 311 in the Gray Hymnal.
The Talmud being a commentary on the Bible, says there are three partners in humanity, God, Father, and Mother. And when you honor your father and mother, God says, I regard it as though I had dwelt among you and you had honored me. So would you take a moment to honor the people around you by saying hello or introducing yourself, knowing that you are honoring the spirit of love itself.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Carol Whiteman, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. To remind us that while we do take a day to celebrate mothers, mothers work every day. And I would like to read a poem by Mahasin Shah Manor. How do you find the energy, Mom, to do all the things you did, to be teacher, nurse, and counselor to me when I was a kid? How did you do it all, Mom? Be a chauffeur, cook, and friend. yet find time to be a playmate. I just can't comprehend. I see now it was love, Mom, that made you come whenever I call. Your inexhaustible love, Mom, and I thank you for it all. I offer a special welcome to grandmothers, mothers, stepmothers, foster moms, aunts, and all those mama number twos on this Mother's Day 2018. Whether you are here with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad that you've chosen to join us for this worship community and celebration. We do our best to help our children learn to give generously and with an open heart. And one of the ways we do this is by collecting non-perishable food items each week for the local food pantries. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or better yet, ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to come up front. Reverend Tony has a story for you.
Hi there. I have a story for you, and it comes from China, and it's a story from the Buddhist tradition. Have you ever heard of Buddhism? Okay, well, it's another religion, like Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, etc. And in the Buddhist tradition, there is something, the Buddha just means awakened person, and by awake it means that you really see things as they are, not just you're awake when you get up in the morning, but that you really understand the world as it is. And the story goes that a young man named Yang Fu wanted to become a Buddha, to be a bodhisattva. And so he discussed it with his parents, and he decided to go to a teacher. He'd heard that there was a teacher across the mountains whose name was Bodhisattva Wuji. And he figured maybe he could study with that teacher and learn how to be a Buddha. Now, what it means to be a Buddha is that you're loving, you're kind, you're compassionate. You don't see people as just separate things that don't matter to you. You're part of everything. And in fact, they refer to it as seeing the Buddha nature in everybody. Okay? In Christianity or Judaism, we might say seeing the God in other people. But it's a similar idea. Or in Unitarian Universalism, we say the worth and dignity of every person. So you see something alight inside each person. So he wanted to become that kind of person. And he kissed his mom and dad goodbye, packed up his belongings, and he went on this long trip to find this great teacher named Bodhisattva Wuji, who lived on the other side of the mountains. So he took this trip, but on the way, there was a great storm. And he was afraid that lightning might hit him, or he was already getting wet, and he was kind of hungry too, and needed a place to stay. And he saw a little bit of smoke coming up from the distance, so he thought there might be a fire somewhere. Maybe it's somebody's chimney. So he followed the smoke, and he came there, and he got into a little hut, and there was an old man there, a hermit, a holy hermit, and he lived there, and Yang Fu said, he said to the hermit said, "What do you seek, my son?" And Yang Fu said, he could have just said, I'm hungry and I want a place to stay. But he said, "I'm looking for Bodhisattva Wuji because I want to learn to become a Buddha." And the hermit said, Bodhisattva Wuji is a great teacher. You would learn a lot from him. But he said, I know someone who's actually a Buddha, not just a Buddha to be, but is already a Buddha, fully enlightened being, and fully awake. And he said, would you like to know where that person is? And Yang Fu said, yes, that would be even better. I'd have a really good teacher. And he said, where do I find this person? And Bodhisattva Wuji said, go back on the steps that you've traveled to get here, retrace your steps. And if you see somebody with a blanket on their shoulder and a lantern in their hand and their shoes on the wrong feet, that will be the Buddha. So what would that person look like? All right, well, we'll try this out here. So he's looking for someone And just fortunately, we happen to have a blanket here. So, he needs to find someone who looks like this. Now, it's already been a couple days, so it's going to be a long journey back. But he goes everywhere he looks, and looks to see if he can see someone with a lantern, a blanket, and their shoes on the wrong feet. And he doesn't see anybody. And he goes on for hours and hours and a couple days. And finally, he goes all the way, he ends up back at home, and he hasn't found the Buddha. And he's kind of disappointed. So, but anyway, he's home, and there's a nice place to sleep, so he knocks on the door, because it's late at night. And the voice says, "Who is there?" And he says, "Mom, it's me. I'm home." And she says, "Just a minute, honey." And he waits, and the door opens, and there is his mother, standing with a lantern because it was laid out, and she wanted to see her way through, a blanket over her nightgown because she didn't have time to put on any regular clothes, and in her haste to get up from bed when she heard his voice, she put her feet in the wrong shoes. And she said, "I'm just so glad to have you back home." And he realized, my mom is the Buddha I've been looking for. She is the teacher. So what I like to think this story is telling us, it's not just moms, but there are other people who are close by us, who have a lot to teach us, who can teach us how to be a better, more compassionate, loving person. It might be your mom, it might be your dad, it might be a teacher, might be a friend, maybe even a brother or sister, although that's unlikely. Just kidding, kids. Anyway, so I like to remember that. And it may even be that you are a Buddha for somebody else. Isn't that great? So let's remember this. Huh? Oh, a cat? Yeah, you know, a cat can be a Buddha too. Good point. All right. So, I'm not going to make you change your shoes, but since you're going to be carrying the lantern down, I thought I'd give you this just to kind of be a reminder to everybody. No, you don't have to do that. It's difficult to walk this way, trust me. All right.
May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Please help join in singing our children off to their classrooms. The song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in your order of service. Praise mothers, we almost always mention their generosity, their willingness to sacrifice for the well-being of their children. Mothers may well be the prototype for our own generosity. The offering is that point in our service when we celebrate that generosity, the generosity that sustains our church family. Even if your pledge is paid some other way, it is worthwhile for you to bring even just a dollar to drop into the basket as a ritual reminder of that form of love we call generosity. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and gratefully received for the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud, and today Reverend Tony will light candles for us. If you'd like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring to you a microphone.
Hi, it's Karen. I have a joy of more continuation of information about Allie and Greg, my daughter and husband and son-in-law, and the three foster children they've been doing respite care for. But they are definitely going to be with them full-time starting June, and they're all going to be with us this afternoon. So I'm looking forward to sharing Mother's Day with them all.
This is Diane, and I have a joy. My husband, Art, is here for his annual visit. And Tuesday is our 64th wedding anniversary. Aww.
Hi, it's Barb. Give a shout out to all the birth mothers in the world.
Hi, this is Diane. This may sound trivial, but in my family it is not. My oldest son has been looking for a home, for their final home, for several years now, and his wife and he had wildly different ideas of what they wanted. They found the perfect house. So we celebrated Mother's Day and the new house last night.
Let us light a candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today. And on this Mother's Day, we light the last candle in honor of our mothers and all those who have been like mothers to us in our lives.
Make it hard for a while, but you're born in may not have been the best. You can make the times to come better than the rest. I know you'll be honest if you can always be kind. Oh yes, sweet darling, so glad you are a child of mine. Child of mine, child of mine. Oh yes, sweet darling, so glad you are a child of mine. Child of mine, child of mine. Oh yes, sweet darling, so glad you are a child of mine.
We have enjoined upon you kindness to your parents. In pain did your mother bear you, and in pain did she give you birth. At length, when you reach the age of full strength and attain 40 years, you say, O my Lord, grant me that I be grateful for your favor, which you have bestowed on me and on both my parents, and that I may work righteousness. Such are they from whom we shall accept the best of their deeds, and pass by their ill deeds. They shall be among the companions of the garden, a promise of truth which was made to them. Here ends the first reading.
Let us be in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life, some of us are here feeling gratitude for the parents who raised us and who rocked us and loved us and sang us lullabies. But some perhaps are feeling a little empty, wishing we had had what everyone else got but us. Some of us are parents ourselves, trying to get it right. Some of us wish we could be, and we grieve for what we cannot have. So for some, a day of joy, grateful memories, and wistful feelings. But for some, a day with more pain than happiness, either because of parents who didn't give what we felt we needed, or children who have left us without the ties we thought we would have. For all these, gathered in one place, but feeling different feelings on this day, we pray for acceptance and understanding, and that love, the love that gives us strength to carry on and leave the world a more gentle place for our having been here. Blessed be. Amen. Please join me for a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or prayer. as we sing our next hymn, I'd like to remind you that all our hymns and prayers to God are actually at least also reflections of who we believe we are and who we believe we can be. So a prayer to God our Father or God our Mother is really a song about our own mothers and fathers, or at least who we wish they had been. And it's a song about ourselves and who we hope to be. Would you rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 23 in the gray hymnal, Bring Many Names. Especially at the verse, warm Father God hugging every child. And I cried because my dad was not that kind of a dad. And so I just would, it took me a long time before I could sing it without actually tearing up a little bit. But over time, I realized that wasn't the only reason that it made me cry. It was because I knew I would never have children of my own. And I would never be that father hugging children, at least my own children, and that was sad too. So I realized there was another layer of meaning there. And also you might find interesting, the person who wrote this song, Carlton Young, I know he's not a Unitarian. I think he's a Methodist, but the Methodists wouldn't put it in their hymnal because of the verse that says, young growing God, eager still to know, willing to be changed by what you've started. And they said, our theology doesn't allow for God to be changed. Eventually, he wrote a more palatable verse for them. And so it's now in other hymnals. But it's a beautiful book, a beautiful hymn, and I like it the way it's originally written. Especially if you think of it, as I do, as a song about all those ideals I hold in my mind, which is what I think of God as, those ideals of goodness and compassion, and as I've said to the children, Buddha nature. Okay, but the second reading today is from a piece by Reverend Lynn Unger, who's the minister of the UU Church of the Larger Fellowship in Boston, Massachusetts. The Church of the Larger Fellowship is kind of a church by mail and email for people in other countries who may not have a connection or live far enough away from other congregations that they really can't get to them. And she wrote this. It's called a reading from. The reading is called "The Second Bear: Reflections on Motherhood." And she writes, "It is a well-known fact among ministers that Mother's Day is next to impossible thing to preach upon. For every person who brings a sainted mother to church on Mother's Day, there is someone else gritting their teeth over the utterly inadequate job their mother did of raising them." And then she says, "The more I think about my own experience as a mother, and the more I talk with friends who are mothers, the more I get caught up in what I would call the Goldilocks paradox. You remember Goldilocks? She breaks into the house of the bear family while they're off on some sort of family outing. And far from feeling ashamed of her reckless and invasive behavior, Goldilocks sets about criticizing everything. The Papa Bear's chair is too big. The Mama Bear's chair is too small. The Papa Bear's porridge is too hot. The Mama Bear's porridge is too cold. Only the baby bear has things just right." And then, and here's the coup de grace, she says, "Having a child, it seems to me, is a great deal like having Goldilocks break into your home, only without the option of scaring her off at the end of the story." And then she continues, "This small, imperious being moves in and takes up residence, and there is no way that the parental role will ever be just right. Only the baby gets to be perfect. In any given situation, your response as a parent will be too hard or too soft, too warm or too cold. The job of a parent is to provide children with limitless, unconditional love and set limits, teach boundaries, and self-control. Children cannot thrive without both all-encompassing love and clear boundaries and limits, and those two essential qualities are invariably at odds. So the chances are good that much of the time what we got from our mother was too hard or too soft, too distant or too confining, too restrictive, too permissive, too demanding or too indifferent, anything but just right." Here ends the second reading. This reading is how I got my sermon title for today, Goldilocks and Mama Bear. Reverend Unger's words made me think about parenthood in a slightly different way than I had before. You see, most of my life, I have judged how my parents raised me, not just in bad ways, but in good ways too. I've judged them. Like, my mom was good in that she encouraged us kids to put on plays and create art projects, and I always knew she loved us. But she was not so good in that I think she was sometimes too harsh in her discipline, and she tended to explode at the end of every Christmas day, perhaps because her own mom had died a few days before Christmas, and she had to raise her younger children, her younger sisters, pretty much on her own with an alcoholic father. So I've always judged her, positively and negatively, on what she did or didn't do right. As for my dad, he was good in that he built things for us kids, like a little church in the backyard where I could pretend to be a priest. I know. I was a really weird kid. My dad built a little church in the backyard. My sister sewed up vestments that I could wear. The parish priest gave me a little beretta to wear, and I would go on the neighborhood sprinkling people with holy water. And when I came upon Catholic kids who weren't going to Mass every Sunday, I warned them that they would be going to hell. And the Protestants, I would say, "Well, you're in the wrong religion, but you'll have fewer sins, but the ones you do have,
you can't go to confession and you can't get the really bad ones forgiven. So you can get to heaven, but it's really hard. So that's the kind of kid I was. I was the kind of kid that most Unitarian parents would kind of keep their kid away from, I think. Anyway, so my dad built those things and lots of other things, but he never seemed to enjoy spending much time with us. You know, we always seemed to be more in the way than fun to him until we were adults. And I've always had some trouble forgiving him for that. Anyway, for most of my life, I have judged how well my parents did their job. And I don't think I'm alone. I've talked with many others about their parents and how they did or didn't do a good job of raising them. So I know this is a common thing to do. And I've often judged myself, though I have no kids of my own, I've wondered often how good of a dad I would have been if I had had children of my own. Would I be as encouraging as my mom or as impatient as my dad? And just as kind of as an aside, when Craig and I first got together, in the beginning we thought we might adopt children. Back then, this was 1984 when we first met, it would have been somewhat difficult, but if we had adopted maybe from India or something, if I had gone as a single person. So we talked about that as a possibility. But as time went on, we were getting older, and I was kind of thinking, I think maybe I'd like to do this. But Craig was teaching public school, and he was with 30 kids every day. And he said, I don't know that I would be able to have the time. And he says, but the biggest problem is as a minister, you have to go away sometimes in the middle of the night. I just don't think you could be there. And but when we used to talk about, we saw a movie called Mommy Dearest. Any of you see that movie? It's about Joan Crawford and how she raised her kids. And we were watching that movie once, and at the end of it, Craig said, "Gosh, wasn't she just a terrible mother?" And I said, "Oh, I think her kids are just whiners." And he said, "Really?" And I said, "Well, my parents did a lot worse than that. You know, if we made noise at night, my dad pulled on our pants and had a wooden spoon that he'd stick in water so it would sting more and beat our butts. And I mean, he did things that today would be considered child abuse, certainly. But I said, you know, she cut off all her daughter's hair, or she hit her with a, you know, that wasn't so bad." And Craig said, "You know, if we had ever adopted a kid, and the only name he could think of for a kid was Lakshmi, because we always celebrated Diwali in our church, and Lakshmi is a goddess of good fortune." So his joke was, he'd say, "I'll have to say, look out, little Lakshmi, bad daddy's coming." So anyway, I have wondered how good of a dad I would have been if I'd had children of my own. So besides the judgments I've made and still make sometimes about my parents, I add on judgments of myself as to how I would have been as a father or how good I am as a minister, which has fatherly roles embedded in it. So for me, Mother's Day and Father's Day have almost always been about judging, good or bad, either my parents or myself. And I suspect for some of you that is also the case. But then I came across this piece on motherhood in Goldilocks, and I began to see parenthood in a slightly different way. Rather than judge myself or my parents, or anyone else for that matter, I think of what it might mean to have a stranger enter your life whom you suddenly have responsibility for. Having a child, says Reverend Unger, is a great deal like having Goldilocks break into your home only without the option of scaring her off at the end of the story. Wow. Was that what it was like for my mom and dad when I and my brothers and sisters were born to them? How could they have prepared for that? Now, one can make the argument that they chose to be parents, so they should have been better prepared. But who ever chooses parenthood with all the facts at hand? I mean, when you decide to become a parent, you may think you know what you're getting into, but each child is sort of like having this little creature break into your house and try this chair and that one, this bowl and the others, and beds 1, 2, and 3, and hardly ever be satisfied with anything they see or touch or eat. And then they complain, either when they're still kids or later when they're adults like me, and probably at both times, about how you didn't give them the right-sized chair or the best-tasting porridge or the most comfortable bed, when the truth is, they're the ones who broke into your house. What did they expect? So having read this little piece about parenting and realizing that everyone who has a child, whether biologically or through adoption, has, in effect, invited a stranger to live with them, having read that piece, it has now gotten a little harder for me to judge how good or bad my parents were, or to judge what kind of parent I might have been, for that matter. And you know, when you consider that this little stranger who's broken into your house, even when he or she has been with you long enough not to feel like a stranger, when you consider that they're going to become a stranger all over again when they reach adolescence, it's like you keep on having a new Goldilocks break into your house every couple of years. Now, the Reverend Lynn Unger, who wrote this piece and who happened to get her child through adoption, had this to add. She says it this way: in my life, certainly the greatest and scariest adventure into the realm of love was the choice to bring a child into our family. What sensible person would commit to loving a total stranger, some random person off the street? Of course, Jesus said, love your neighbor, but even he didn't suggest that you take that neighbor, whatever your neighbor happened to be, and bring them into your house for the next two decades. She says, we're talking love here, not some namby-pamby sort of general goodwill, but unconditional, diaper-changing, tantrum-tolerating, hands-on, unshakable love, no questions asked, and no backsies. When you look at parenthood that way, either the parenthood you received or the parenthood you may have given, maybe the question to ask is not, why didn't I get the love I should have had, or why didn't I give the love I should have given, but how does the miracle of love ever happen at all? Because you see, you could ask the same question about your friends or your significant other if you have one. If you have a spouse or partner, that person too is ever-changing, as are you. So no matter who they were when you first got together, they're certainly not quite that person anymore, are they? And you aren't the one that they first fell in love with either. So how do you manage to hold a place in your heart for someone who is, in effect, one stranger after another, as are you? Likewise, with the friends you may keep over years and years, maybe the question isn't, why aren't they better friends? But how did friendship with a complete stranger ever become possible? And how is it that when a new Goldilocks seems to come into my home every couple of years or so, I find a place in my heart for each one? What kind of miracle is that? When I begin to think this way about my parents and about my husband, about my friends, or even about myself, there is a shift from how good or how bad and a ranking system that pits one person against another, my mom versus someone else's, my parents versus yours, who got the most breaks, who's the most scarred, whose oppression is worse, who got off too lightly. There's a shift from that comparison shopping to an utter awe that anyone manages this thing called love at all, let alone poorly or well. How is it that we end up inviting Goldilocks into our home and our hearts, not just once, but twice, not just twice, but over and over again? How do we do that? Shouldn't that be impossible, or at least very rare? And yet it seems to happen, and quite frequently, in fact. Now, I don't say any of this to dismiss whatever complaints you may have had and might still have about your parents. I still have my complaints. Or to ignore the shortcomings that you may feel you have exhibited as a parent or partner or friend. Those may be all completely valid, and each of us may need to spend time analyzing our past and doing some comparison shopping, as it were. How did my mom stack up against yours? How good have I been as a parent, spouse, or friend? How scarred or blessed has my childhood been compared to everyone else's? These are no doubt interesting questions and fascinating, but they are not the only questions one could ask. Let me put it this way. If you are watching a sunset or a sunrise, there are a couple ways you might do that. One way is to just enjoy the colors you see and ooh and ah over the spectacle. The other way is to watch the sun near the horizon and compare the colors you see with the colors you saw the last time you watched a sunset, or with the colors you've seen in certain photographs that compare favorably or unfavorably to this one. Both are valid ways to look at a sunset, but they are quite different experiences. And you know, when I was preparing this sermon, I went to my Mother's Day file and I found lots of stories of inspirational parenting and cute stories, sentimental stories, stories that might bring a tear to your eye or a wistful smile at some personal memory. But I realized they could just as well set up a rating scale for doing comparison shopping. Well, my mom never did that, or my family upbringing was not that blessed. In fact, I remember as a kid watching Leave It to Beaver almost every week on TV and thinking, boy, I sure got the short end of the stick. Because not only was my family much poorer than theirs, but my parents weren't really so nice or understanding. Beaver's mom and dad were almost always kind and thoughtful, and those few times when they made a mistake, they actually apologized. My parents weren't like that. Were yours? So why couldn't I have had June and Ward from my mom and dad, or people like them? That's what I thought. So rather than set up a comparison shopping adventure for you today by telling some tender stories about parents that may or may not remind you of your own, let me just say that love of any kind or rating is a sort of miracle. And the fact that any of us is able to invite a stranger into our heart and let them live there without always knowing who they will become or who we will become in the process is a little like a sunrise or a sunset. We don't have to rate it to find it amazing. We don't have to compare it to other sunsets that we've seen or heard about. It is a miracle all by itself, as are you. I invite you, since we have a little time, if you would like to share a memory of a parent or someone who was like a parent to you, or any thoughts you might have on the whole subject. And if the can get the microphone passed around. And
good morning. I'm Barbara. I have two totally separate things. First, you said inviting a stranger into your house. I think quite a few of us didn't quite do that. It happened. And now it isn't so common, I think. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, as you were talking, there are so many families that grow up in war. Yeah. I was one of those children. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that thinking about being a good parent even enters. I think it's survival, it's food, it's protection, it's, is it better if I leave the children in a safer place? But what if I get killed? And then they're alone. I mean, parenting we've looked at is American parenting. Mm-hmm. And I think we should start thinking about the other kind of parenting and how difficult and how does anybody survive that type of childhood when the parents are trying but they can't, or it's an accident, and then here they have this little person to take care of. I think mothers give their lot. I mean, it's just inborn. There's an instinct more than there is probably in fathers. I'm not sure of that, though. I haven't really looked that closely yet. But I think we should address that a little bit, too. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Karen again. This is the first time I've ever spoken twice in service. But I have, my mom died about 26 years ago, but I have this fond memory from when I was about in second grade, and I went to a Catholic school, and the nun told us to go home and thank our parents. And so I did, as I was told, surprisingly. My mom was sitting in a chair after school, and I climbed up in her lap and said, "Mom, thank you for everything you did for me today." And, you know, we had six kids. And she just started crying and just was so happy to be thanked for being a mom and everything she does.
If I could add on to that, when I was in college and taking a class in child psychology, you know, learning how to raise kids and stuff, you know, certainly I thought about, well, my parents didn't do this right. But I thought there were some things that they did right. So I wrote a letter to my mom and dad that said, "You know, Mom and Dad, I'm taking a class in psychology, and I discovered that some of the things you did were right." That was the best I could do. And my mother probably cried when she read it. And she told people ever after, you know, and I thought, wow, I probably have never really told her. I mean, that she was like so pleased that she got something right. So, yeah, if we could do that more often, that'd be good. Thank you.
Good morning. I've had kind of this reverse Goldilocks experience where my mom had a major stroke 13 years ago at the age of 48. And so when I was 21, dealing with a completely different mom than the mom I grew up with and having to parent her in a way, you know, she doesn't have the short-term memory. And just, you know, helping her along and being her caretaker, which has been just a totally different experience as I'm also raising kids and kind of taking care of them. It's just this, you know, this weird dynamic. And then kind of an embarrassing story, as you shared, when I also grew up Catholic, and so my sister and I must also be really weird because we played Body of Christ. We played communion with vanilla wafers and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Smash up the bread and it's like, so good.
So this is Al, and you know, your comments about not choosing. I'm sitting here squirming next to my wife, and bless her. But what came to mind when August said, kidney. So when Karen and I talked and decided that we wanted to be parents, it seemed sort of natural, and I didn't really think forward, you know, seemed like the thing we should do, and we both wanted to. But what came to mind when August talked about Kitty having Buddha nature was that I've always loved dogs, and I chose not to have dogs because I was concerned about the life the dog would have, and yet I didn't really think that deeply about children.
All right. If I could move on to just another little thing. I've been talking about parenthood, but I want to say something about a little step beyond that. A second grade teacher was teaching her class a science lesson, and she was teaching them about magnets. So she's holding up a magnet, and when the review time came, she asked questions in the form of riddles. So she asked one kid, she said, "My name starts with an M, and I pick up things. What am I?" And the kid said right away, "A mother." Well, moms and magnets do go together. Moms often do pick up things, but not just the things we leave around the house. They sometimes pick us up when our hopes have fallen or our dreams are shattered. But you know, picking up is not limited to biological moms. Sometimes there are other people in our lives who pick us up when we have stumbled. There's an old saying that says, you know, God couldn't be everywhere, so God made mothers. And the truth is, mothers can't be everywhere either. So fortunately, there are other people in our lives who sometimes act like mothers for us. people who dry our tears when we just can't go on anymore, at least we think we can't. People who say a kind word when we have a desperate need to hear one. And people who put their arms around us when we think no one could possibly love us. These people are mothers too, in a way, even if they don't actually happen to have children of their own. In that spirit, I'll read you something by Paul Villiard, who's an author now, but remembers what it was like when he was a little kid, and they had one of those early telephones, you know, the kind where you had a receiver that you would put over your ear and you talk into the speaker box and the mouthpiece, and it was this big wooden box screwed onto the wall, and here's what he says. When I was quite young, my family had one of the first telephones in our neighborhood. I remember well the polished oak case fastened to the wall on the lower stair landing. I even remember the number, 105. They didn't need bigger numbers in those days. They didn't have that many people with the phones. I was too little to reach the telephone, but I used to listen with fascination when my mother talked to it. Once she lifted me up and to speak to my father, who was away on business. Magic. Then I discovered that somewhere inside that wonderful device lived an amazing person named Information Please. And there was nothing she didn't know. My mother could ask her for anyone's number, and when our clock ran down, Information Please immediately supplied the correct time. My first experience with this genie in the receiver came one day while my mother was visiting a neighbor. Amusing myself at the tool bench in the basement, I had whacked my finger with a hammer. The pain was terrible. I walked around the house, sucking my throbbing finger, finally arriving at the stairway. The telephone! Quickly, I ran for the footstool in the parlor and dragged it to the landing. Climbing up, I unhooked the receiver and held it to my ear. Information, please, I said to the earpiece. A click or two, and a small, clear voice spoke into my ear. Information. I heard my finger, I wailed into the phone. Isn't your mother home? Nobody's home but me. Are you bleeding? No, I hit it with a hammer and it hurts. Can you open the icebox, she asked. I said I could. Then chip off a little piece of ice and hold it on your finger. That'll stop the hurt. But be careful when you use the ice pick. And don't cry, you'll be all right. After that, I called Information Please for everything. I asked for help with my geography, and she told me where Philadelphia was and the Orinoco, the romantic river I was going to explore when I grew up. She helped me with my arithmetic, and she told me that a pet chipmunk I caught him in the park just the day before would eat fruits and nuts. And there was the time that Petey, our pet canary, died. I called Information Please and told her the sad story. She listened and said the usual things grown-ups say to soothe the child, but I was unconsoled. Why was it that birds should sing so beautifully and bring joy to whole families, only to end up as a heap of feathers on the bottom of a cage? She must have sensed my name, my deep concern, for she said quietly, Paul, she knew my name, Paul, always remember that there are other worlds to sing in. Somehow I felt better. Another day I was at the telephone. Information, said the now familiar voice. How do you spell fix, I said. Fix something? F-I-X. And that instant, my sister, who took unholy joy in scaring me, jumped off the stairs at me with a banshee shriek, and I fell off the stool, pulling the receiver out of the box by its roots. And we were both terrified. Information, please, was no longer there. And I was not at all sure that I hadn't heard her when I pulled the receiver out. Minutes later, there was a man on the porch. I'm a telephone repairman. I was working down the street, and the operator said there might be some trouble at this number. He reached for the receiver in my hand. What happened? I told him. Well, we can fix that in a minute or two. He opened the telephone box and fiddled for a while, and then tightened things with a small screwdriver. He jingled the hook up and down a few times and then spoke into the phone. Hi, this is Pete. Everything's under control at 105. The kid's sister scared him, and he pulled the cord out of the box. He hung up, smiled, gave me a pat on the head, and walked out the door. All this took place in a small town in the Pacific Northwest. Then, when I was 9 years old, we moved across the country to Boston, and I missed my mentor acutely. Information, please, belonged in that old wooden box back home, and I somehow never thought of trying the tall, skinny new phone that sat on a small table at our home in Boston. Yet, as I grew into my teens, the memories of those childhood conversations never really left me. Often in the moments of doubt and perplexity, I would recall the serene sense of security I had when I knew I could call Information, Please, and get the right answer. I appreciated now how very patient, understanding, and kind she was to have wasted her time on a little boy. A few years later, on my way west to college, my plane put down in Seattle. I had about half an hour between plane connections, and without really thinking what I was doing, I dialed my hometown operator and said, "Information, please," and miraculously, I heard again the small, clear voice I knew so well. "Information." I hadn't planned this, but I heard myself saying, "Could you tell me, please, how to spell the word fix?" There was a long pause, and then came the softly spoken answer. "I guess," she said, "your finger must have healed by now." I laughed. "So it's really you. I wonder if you have any idea how much you meant to me during all that time." "I wonder," she replied, "if you know how much you meant to me. I never had any children, and I used to look forward to your calls." Silly, isn't it? It didn't seem silly, but I didn't say so. Instead, I told her how often I had thought of her over the years, and I asked if I could call her again when I came back to visit my sister after the first semester was over. "Please do," she said. "Just ask her, Sally." "Goodbye, Sally." It sounded strange for Information, Please, to have a name. I said to her, "If I run into chipmunks, I'll tell them to eat fruits and nuts." "Do that," she said, "and I expect one of these days you'll be off for the Orinoco River." "Well, goodbye." Just 3 months later, I was back in Seattle Airport. A different voice answered, "Information," and I asked for Sally. "Are you a friend?" the voice said. "Yes, an old friend." "Then I'm sorry to have to tell you, Sally had only been working part-time in the last 3 years because she was ill. She died 5 weeks ago." But before I could hang up, she said, "Wait a minute, did you say your name was Paul Villiard?" "Yes." "Well, Sally left a message for you. She wrote it down." "What was it?" I asked. "Here it is, I'll read it. Tell him I still say there are other worlds to sing in. He'll know what I mean." I thanked her and hung up. I did know what Sally meant. Folks, I don't know if there are other worlds for canaries and people to sing in, but I do know that our songs live on in this world, and that there are many people who throughout our lives answer our questions and heal our wounds and take our hand and in general pick up things for us like a magnet or a mom. Some of us who don't have kids of our own, or do but they're grown up and are on their own, still wish to be mothers and fathers of a sort. And you will find us all around you. We are your teachers, your ministers, your bus drivers, your doctors and nurses, your uncles and aunts, librarian, principal, police, sales clerk, firefighter, friend of the family, maybe even telephone operator. Give thanks this day for all who have nurtured your life, who have helped you to be who you are. And may you pass on to others the nurturing you have to give so that they, in their turn, will be able to look back at you and give thanks on some future Mother's or Father's Day.
We extinguish this flame, but we keep its light in our hearts with its message of love and justice, taking it outside these walls to the world we live in until we are together again. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn this week, number 409 in the Great Hymnal, "Sleep, My Child."
May creatures all abound in health and happiness. May all be blessed with peace. All creatures weak or strong, all creatures great and small, may all be blessed with peace. Just as the mother shields her only child from hurt with her own life, so let an all-embracing thought for all that lives be yours, an all-embracing love for all the universe in all its heights and depth and breadth. Amen.